From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Women's rates of depression are 2 to 6 times higher than men's all over the world, both in industrialized and non-industrialized countries. Why is that, and what can be done about it? Psychologist Dana Jack has written about that in her groundbreaking book, Silencing the Self, Women and Depression, and the more recent book, Silencing the Self Across Cultures, that applies her theories across a range of cultures. That book recently won a major award. She's based right here in the Northwest, where she's a professor of psychology at Western Washington University's Fairhaven College. Her focus is culture, gender, and psyche. Thank you so much for coming down. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Let's define our terms, first of all. You're talking about major depression. What is it?
Well, major depression, as defined by the experts, includes at least 2 weeks of sad or empty mood, and then at least 5 symptoms that affect your mind, like inability to concentrate, or your body, like inability to sleep or sleeping too much, or overeating or not eating, and then also affects your mood powerfully.
You said defined by the experts. Are you satisfied with that definition?
Well, I think that what that definition does is really focus on the behavioral aspects of depression. And it does focus on mood as well. But what happens is that depression itself affects a person's, I think, mind, body, and spirit. And it affects their sense of identity, their sense of future, and so forth. So as far as we know right now, that definition is used also across cultures. So it's not very useful in terms of cultures that differ from our own.
Now, that those numbers, 2 to 6 times as high, higher from women to men, is a pretty startling statistic to hear about. Is that widely accepted among people in the field?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and the World Health Organization confirms it. A number of others, the World Bank, has looked at it. So it is generally accepted.
Now, is this a gap that is growing? Do we know what the numbers are over time? Is the gap getting less?
There's a lot of controversy about that. Some studies are saying that men's rates are increasing, but generally that statistic has held for many years.
Now, we got lots of response on Facebook when I put out that number and from people about women's rates of depression being 2 to 6 times higher than men's around the world. Jenny wrote, "How much could be due to men underreporting, not reporting symptoms of depression?" Jaime wrote, "I don't think men feel as free to report feelings of depression as women do," end quote. Could that be part of the reason for this disparity, not that men are not reporting their depression?
Yes, it could be, very much so. And in fact, there's a whole realm of thought that says, well, men mask their depression because they're not free to admit vulnerable feelings like weakness or needing help or whatever, you know, aspect. That would be why they don't seek help as often. And that men more often use alcohol and drugs and other sort of ways to numb their feelings or to deal with their feelings. Other experts would say, no, that's not right at all. We have this checklist of symptoms, and we know that women are more often depressed according to these symptoms.
Hmm. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think it's complex.
Yeah.
I think that men probably do have mood disturbances, but it leaps straight through anger and denial to other behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And even it's very difficult for a number of men to admit or to acknowledge feelings of vulnerability. And we know, for example, there's the National Institute of Health had an internet, basically.
Survey.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily a survey, but a way to try to help men that was called Real Men, Real Stories.
Mm.
And what it was is it took men who are archetypally masculine, you know, like policemen, firemen, etc., and talked about the importance of needing to admit that you're vulnerable and you need help.
Fairhaven College psychologist Dana Jack is with us, and we're talking about her work over the years that's taken a look at these startling numbers, the high percentage of the high numbers of women who have suffer from depression 2 to 6 times as often as men do. And of course, we want to get to the core of this, which is why. Here's what some of the people wrote on Facebook. Sylvia wrote, because we have to deal with men. Dick wrote, I would say depression comes easy when you're continually viewed as lesser. Andy's theory on why this is, isn't depression doing things without hope of changing? Doesn't that make you angry? And Amy wrote, higher levels of depression among women because we spend a lot of time doing things which no one notices, acknowledges, or values. Those are people's kind of off the top of their head reactions to why this might be. What's your reaction to them, and what do you think's really going on here?
Well, we know that social inequality exposes women to the factors that cause depression more often than it exposes men, because they don't have the same amount of social inequality. So take violence, for example. Violence against women is a major factor that causes depression. I mean, we know that. 1 in 3 women around the world is going to be beaten or raped during her lifetime. The other factor is poverty. Poverty is a pathway into depression, and women and children are more often in poverty. There are a number of other factors involved, and that is what I think and what my work has been, is that women focus on their relationships. We are social beings, and we need positive, affirming relationships. The fact is, women have a puzzle, and that is they have to create intimacy within relationships of inequality. And to do that, what I have found in my own research is that women silence a lot of their feelings. So they silence themselves in order to make and maintain relationships. But in so doing, they disconnect from themselves. They disconnect from the partner because they're hiding a vast part of themselves. And they get confused about who they really are and so forth. And the studies have shown across a number of cultures that self-silencing, as measured by this scale called the Silencing the Self Scale, is associated with depression. And that's been found now in approximately 21 countries.
The idea is they go along to get along, and this causes damage to them inside from holding these things in.
Exactly. And we know also now, because of a range of researchers that are using this, that it also causes a range of negative health effects. So it's been associated with all-cause mortality in a study by Elaine Eaker, who looked at the Framingham Offspring Health Study, mm-hmm. Heart Health Study. And in a period of 10 years, she asked women and men, in marital arguments, do you silence yourself? Always, often, never, or rarely. And women who said always or most of the time, in that intervening 10 years, were 4 times more likely to die of any causes than women who said rarely or never, and then men who said all of the time, most of the time, etc. So that's one study. There are many, many others, because the wonderful part of this has been that other research have used their imaginations and their expertise to take the scale to other areas that they are interested in.
Dana Jack is my guest. We're talking about the Silencing the Self theory that she's applied in her first book, and also now Across Cultures, the new book, an award-winning book about how this plays out across a range of cultures. And she was a Fulbright Scholar in Kathmandu back in 2001. Maybe you've got a question for her or a comment. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's 800-289-5869. Write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Now, a lot of people who exhibit signs of depression are prescribed drugs to try to help them through those symptoms. What does that kind of approach to treatment do when it comes to what you would argue would be kind of the core issue, is that they're silencing themselves? Does that help what's going on that's causing it in the first place?
Well, first let me speak generally about that, because, the studies have shown that medication alone is not as effective in treating depression as talk therapy and medication together. It's also found that talk therapy changes the brain in ways that are longer lasting than if you take medication alone. So what I think it's showing is that we need connection. And that is that connection with a therapist or someone who is trusted, that where one can really share one's feelings, is critical to health. It's critical to one's long-term well-being, and it's critical to overcoming depression. So I think, but also the studies show, that medication alone is not enough. There are definitely cases when medication is called for, along with talk therapy, and that is when someone is suicidally depressed or severely depressed over a long period of time, because the medication may change the brain enough so that the person is more able to take advantage of the therapeutic relationship. And that needs to be one of really an ability to say what the patient is thinking and feeling. And there's another study that shows that clients who went into therapy as high self-silencers also silenced during therapy and did not do well.
That was my next question. It sounds as though applying this theory to therapy, I mean, it's talk therapy. It's the opposite of silencing the self. Mm-hmm. It's talking about the self, but even that knowledge doesn't help the therapy work necessarily.
No, unless the therapist is aware and begins to start asking the client about disconnecting. How do you disconnect? Where are you doing it? How are you feeling with me now? I see you looking away. Is that something you don't want to say? But the therapist can be involved in helping the person explore how they disconnect. Because also the thing that's so interesting is that we know that isolation creates depression and not only fosters it, but furthers it and continues it. And that we also know that connection is what is healing, that there's this amazing convergence right now of bodies of work in evolutionary biology, psychology, and other fields that are showing that the brain is social, that we are social creatures, and that we are in danger when we are isolated. So silencing the self is one step, and it's a pretty strong step away from connection.
Each woman's personal conditions are different, but I think we could look across societies and say that some are more oppressive to women and others are less oppressive to women. There are more opportunities, more ability to speak out. When you compare those societies, do you see that in societies that have more opportunities for women, there is less depression?
Well, not really. Remember that the sex difference holds across developed and developing countries.
Right. Well, why would that be if you're in a society that is less oppressive to women?
Okay. So I think that I wish I had a lot of time, but I can give you a little example.
Sure.
So one of the people I interviewed was a physician. She's 36. She's married to a physician. So her husband knows her situation, right? So she comes home from work and says to me, all I want to do is sit down on the couch and relax, but then it makes me feel like I'm a bad mother because I'm not sitting down and playing with the children. And so I do sit down, but then I don't feel good, and I can't tell my husband because he'll think I'm weird or whatever. So a lot of what's going on in developed countries, like a woman with all those opportunities as a physician, a lot of what is going on is that the roles are very strong. The demands of putting others first, the demands of, and so one of the sentences in the scale is doing things just for myself is selfish. There are a number of things that tap into the roles. And the roles of homemaker and mother conflict with the roles of professional. We also have studies of women with HIV in inner city Boston who are very differently situated in their lives than this professional woman. And they say things like, well, you know, I couldn't tell him to use a condom because I wanted to keep the relationship. And so what you have is a yearning for connection, a yearning for intimacy, but so many barriers in terms of what you should be like in order to be loved and lovable, or how you should interact with this person who you want to make and maintain relationships with.
My guest is Dana Jack, psychologist. We're talking about the theory of silencing the self. And we have Elaine on the line, and she's calling from up near you in Bellingham with a question about another aspect of this. Elaine, what's your question?
Well, my question is, as roles actually change, as an older adult gets older, their role with their adult children changes, and they may not be as powerful and actually maintain the relationship, subjugate themselves somewhat to the adult child as they become more dependent. And I'm wondering if this plays a role in the enhanced levels of, or more prevalent levels of, depression in older adults, and older women in particular.
Dana?
Well, that's a really interesting question. First, I'd like to mention that the highest rates of depression in women occur between 24 and 44, right in there during the childbearing years, when the demands for caregiving and also the multiple demands on women are the strongest. I think that at every age, like what you're mentioning, is that if women are older and really seeking to maintain connection with their adult children and feel like in order to do that, they must stop saying certain things, or you know what I mean, they must hide parts of themselves and parts of their feelings, that could be a factor. There are many other factors going on as women age. One is our culture demands that you look a certain way. And so, of course, there's the loss of attractiveness, which there's a lot of work on the fact that that affects women pretty strongly. There are other factors, other losses occurring, like, physical problems developing and so forth. But I think you're right to point to that. I think that's one area, certainly, that is that occurs for women.
Hey, Elaine, thanks a lot for your phone call. We're just about out of time, but a follow-up to your last remarks, is there an age at which women are least apt to be depressed?
Well, so I'll tell you another age when they're most likely to be. No. So, for example, if you take girls age 14 to 18, they're much more likely to be depressed than boys at that age, of the same age. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I think in all the studies that we have, that women who are attending university have the lowest rates of depression. And that may be because this is the time when they have the least role demands, the most open toward the future. Mm-hmm. You know, you can dream about what you'll be, and none of the confining structures have come in to affect things. However, in my classes with young women, they're still talking about the demands of being women according to how the culture defines that, which is to defer to what the guy wants.
Dana Jack, thank you so much for coming down. We really appreciate it. I've enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you.
The two books are called Silencing the Self, Women and Depression, and the more recent book, Silencing the Self Across Cultures, written by Dana Jack. David Hyde produces our show with Arwen Nix. We get production help from Cameron Drews. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. I'm Ross Reynolds.